Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, August 27th. Taking place at this hour on Albuquerque's Civic Plaza is a mass marriage ceremony for same-sex couples, among the first to receive marriage licenses today from Bernalillo's County Clerk. That comes by way of a Monday afternoon ruling by a state district court judge in Albuquerque, asserting the legality of marriage equality under equal protection provisions of our state's constitution. The Duke City's public marriage ceremony event is hosted by political advocacy groups, Progress Now New Mexico and Equality New Mexico. Officiating will be a judge, a reverend, and a rabbi, with a facilitator to handle Spanish language services. The groups say they wanted to provide a simple way for couples to complete the marriage process without any unnecessary delay or confusion. Meanwhile, San Miguel County Clerk Melanie Rivera confirmed to Progress Now New Mexico this morning that her office is preparing to issue same-sex marriage licenses to applicants there later this week after receipt of new gender-neutral paperwork. But the clerk says she will issue licenses today if requested, making necessary changes on the document by hand. The addition of San Miguel County brings to a total of four counties no longer prohibiting same-sex marriage. Doña Ana and Santa Fe began the process last week. New Mexico's U.S. senators and House representatives have announced that our state will receive $26 million in mineral royalty payments that were being held by the federal government due to sequestration cuts. The delegation, along with lawmakers from other western states, led a bipartisan call for the administration to return the money. The Interior Department now says it will do so beginning October 1st, the start of the federal government's new fiscal year. As long as sequestration is in place, it's expected that future funds will still be subject to sequester in the year they are collected, but returned the following fiscal year. Democratic State Senator Linda Lopez of Bernalillo is criticizing Governor Martinez over $2.8 million dedicated to the Developmental Disability Support Program that went unspent in fiscal year 2013. Lopez says that inaction denied government assistance to 130 developmentally disabled New Mexicans. Law required that the unspent allocation be returned to the general fund. Lopez notes that for the current fiscal year, lawmakers have allocated some $4.3 million for the program. Lopez is urging the governor to make sure the monies are used as intended to aid some 230 developmentally disabled people currently on a waiting list for state assistance. When Santa Fe City Council meets tonight, they'll hear public comment on the proposal to ban the use of plastic bags by city retailers. The ordinance would place a fee on single-use paper bags and encourage merchants to offer reusable bags. Also to be discussed is putting recommended changes to the city's charter before voters in a special election to take place concurrent with the March 2014 municipal election. Among suggestions covering campaign contributions and governance, the Charter Review Commission recommends making the mayoral post a full-time position with commensurate pay and prohibiting other employment. The mayor would also have expanded hiring and firing powers and would vote on all matters before City Council. KSFR will broadcast the proceedings live beginning at 5 p.m. Garrett's Desert Inn in downtown Santa Fe is the subject of a $2.8 million foreclosure debt lawsuit. That amount represents the outstanding principal on a $3.9 million loan the owners acquired back in 2007. The foreclosure suit also references some $51,000 owed to the city of Santa Fe for unpaid lodgers' taxes. The city filed a lien on the property last year. RiverSource Life Insurance Company of New York is the holder of the inn's note and wants a court-ordered sale of the property to satisfy the debt. On a similar topic, foreclosure rates in Santa Fe decreased for the month of June over the same period last year. That according to new numbers from National Real Estate Data Clearinghouse CoreLogic. The June rate is pegged at 2.65%, representing a drop of 0.75 percentage point from June 2012. The national foreclosure rate is a bit lower at 2.4%. Mortgage delinquencies in Santa Fe are also lower than last year, with now just 4.6% of all local mortgages 90 days or more in arrears. A technology transfer collaboration between some Los Alamos National Laboratory researchers and business giant Procter & Gamble has been hailed with a Lanel Prize for Innovation Achievement. Michael Hamada, Harold Martz, and their team of associates have been so honored for their reliability technology, a process that streamlines manufacturing processes that Procter & Gamble now uses to save more than $1 billion a year. And weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny over the next few days with highs in the low 80s. Just a slight chance for an isolated late-day shower today, increasing to 30% tomorrow. Currently, in Santa Fe, the temperature stands at 76 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. In Albuquerque, Mayor Richard Berry and others are recommending that the city begin an effort to give women equal pay. At this time, the action would be strictly voluntary. Here to discuss the issue is Pat Davis of Progress Now New Mexico. Pat, we understand that you're of the mind that since compliance would be simply voluntary, it doesn't really change anything.
That's right. Mayor Berry and his two appointed Republican city councilors here in Albuquerque over the weekend proposed a new task force to examine pay equity in Albuquerque, but also to start a process by which city employers can receive incentives for purchasing or other things if they voluntarily choose to pay women equally with their male counterparts. And I got to tell you, quite frankly, we don't think that really goes far enough, because paying women equally should be a tenet of any business working in Albuquerque, not as an incentive or not an option.
So even though it's voluntary, there are some potential benefits to the equal pay?
That's right. One of the ways in which they propose to do it is to provide an incentive or extra points on city bids or contracts, a lot like the state does, and a lot like some municipalities do to businesses who certify that they pay women equally with men. But it only applies to businesses who choose to do business with the city, and as near as the councilors have so far explained, to those who choose to go through that certification process.
Pat, this is not a new issue. When do you think women will actually receive equal pay?
If we knew the answer to that, I think we'd all be better off, and we could, a lot of our families would be better. But again, we're 50 years ago this past weekend, we saw people coming back to Washington to march on Washington to rekindle Dr. King's dream. And as a number of folks have pointed out, really, we are 50 years later only sort of realizing the first down payment on that dream. There's a lot to still be done when it comes to equality, whether it's equality for women in the workplace or in society or with marriage equality we're seeing popping up all over New Mexico right now. These things are always a transition. They're hopefully always a progress forward. But at this day and age, I can't imagine any real city on a world global stage who couldn't say that equality for women is not a central tenet of business and a central value of any 21st century American city.
And what's your next step?
Well, first things first, we're asking the city council not only to take another step farther, to not only say that businesses who want to do business with the city should pay women equally, but that every single business in the city should pay women equally. In fact, for the first time last year, we passed a statewide Fair Pay for Women Act. Progress Now worked very much with a number of coalitions of other organizations to help push that, and we're thankful that the governor signed it. So there are statewide provisions that allow women to file grievances if they think they're not being paid equally. But in the city of Albuquerque, as sort of the state's flagship city for so many issues, we think that any business who gets a business license here should have to pay women the same as they would pay their male counterparts. It's a no-brainer when it comes to responsible business and just good New Mexico values. So we want folks to reach out, call the mayor, call the city council here in Albuquerque, tell them that as a resident of New Mexico, this is what you want to see in a New Mexico city that you visit and where you do business, where you choose to spend your money. And we hope that this, as it passes here in the city of Albuquerque, if we can get enough of our counselors on board, that a similar measure would spread across other cities, like Santa Fe, where pay inequity has not been as dramatic as it is here in Albuquerque, but it still exists.
You mentioned the state law that the governor signed off on. Tell us a bit more about that.
New Mexico has been at the bottom of the list when it comes to a number of inequities, including a number of states that have been don't provide for pay equity for women for a number of years. Under Governor Richardson, Martha Burke chaired a task force to begin this similar process to provide requirements for businesses who have state contracts to pay women equally. But it wasn't until this year that legislators were able to put forward the Fair Pay for Women Act across the state of New Mexico, and it really provides for an outlet, much like the federal Lilly Ledbetter Act, provides for women who believe they've been treated unfairly or believe they're being paid less to file a lawsuit or to use state resources to file a grievance to investigate that and to go after their employer to recover lost wages. It's a really big step, and quite frankly, one that's probably long overdue, much like the federal Ledbetter Act. But it's 1 year for New Mexico workers under New Mexico law, and that was a big step. And so now what we're looking for are for cities to take this up and really carry the banner forward a little bit.
And are you going to be posting some of this information on your website?
We will. We're going to post something new today. You can visit us at progressnownm.org. And there's actually a Facebook thread happening. A lot of folks are having a conversation about it starting yesterday on our Facebook page at ProgressNowNM. So a lot of folks interested, and I think we're going to see a lot more news come out of this in Albuquerque in the coming weeks as the city council gets ready to do that. So we hope folks will follow us and stay tuned.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I think it's important with so many elections going on across New Mexico in the next coming few months and 6 months or so. This is something that voters can engage with their own city councilors in. This doesn't have to be just an Albuquerque issue. In New Mexico, women make in the neighborhood of 70% to 75% less city by city than their male counterparts. The city of Santa Fe is far ahead of that because of things like the increased minimum wage that puts all workers on a more level playing field. But even in Santa Fe, a recent report said that women were still making 91 cents to the dollar of their male counterparts. So this is something that every city can engage in, every voter in New Mexico, every resident of New Mexico can engage their city and their city councilor in. And it doesn't take much to pass a resolution to say women should be paid equally as men. And if you don't do that, we are going to require you to do that as a condition of doing business in this city. So we hope to see this as sort of an opportunity for a jumping-off point for the next stage of this conversation. And city by city, county by county, we'll help to right this wrong and help working women get the money and the wage that they deserve.
Pat Davis of Progress Now New Mexico, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Support for KSFR comes from the Zia Diner, home of upscale, down-home comfort food, serving hormone and antibiotic-free beef, chicken, and eggs, and with many gluten-free options for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Zia Diner also offers European soccer and lots of other sporting events televised in the bar, as well as evening performances by local singer-songwriters and bands. For a schedule of upcoming events and their full menu, visit ziadiner.com. See you at the Zia.
19 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. This week, the Department of Labor and the Mexican Consulate in Albuquerque are sponsoring Labor Rights Week. Christina Marwan is a wage and hour investigator with the department. Christina, tell us about this event.
It's the all week long, pretty much labor rights with the consulate. They invite different agencies to discuss labor rights. I had a presentation that I did on Monday, and it was concerning pretty much what Wage and Hour does and how we are able to help low-wage workers.
We know that immigrant workers frequently are the victims of wage theft. What are some of the other difficulties that they experience?
It's not that they're not making maybe $7.25 an hour, that's the federal minimum wage, but they can be experiencing deductions for things such as uniforms, tools that can put them below the minimum wage. Also, not keeping track of hours, that's a big problem. Sometimes they are working off the clock hours, like such as preliminary or post-work, and or getting paid overtime at straight time instead of time and a half.
How prevalent is the problem of these workers being underpaid?
We do find that a lot because what's happening is that sometimes they're being paid in cash, sometimes they're not on payroll, and so it just becomes even on a problem on a larger scale because there may be issues with, you know, no taxes were taken out, how they're classified. They're not classified as employees. They have no real proof that they're actually employed with the company. So a lot of what we do is actually conduct investigations. So we, besides looking at payroll records and time records, and we do go back 2 years, we also do interviews, and we interview employees to ensure that the information that we're looking at as far as payroll records and time records correspond.
How easy is it for an immigrant worker to file a complaint about unfair labor practices?
That's the reason why we do go out and work with the Mexican consulate, because a lot of times they don't have the knowledge, or they don't have the information. They don't know they have certain rights as far as to get paid at least the minimum wage. And we actually go to the consulate the first Monday of every month, and we provide information, and we let them know that we are here to help. So they can actually file here in our office. We're in the old federal building, down Albuquerque downtown, 500 Gold. They can also do it telephonically. They can call us. Our phone number is 1-866-487-9243. They can call. They can be forwarded to this office directly. Our local number is area code 505-248-6100. And just Albuquerque District Office alone covers all of New Mexico and parts of West Texas.
And do you receive a lot of complaints?
You know, the thing about us is that we actually go out and conduct investigations without having any type of complaints. And so we ensure compliance. And so we look at different industries of where workers may be vulnerable, and we go and conduct investigations, and that's without complaints. So most of our cases, if not the majority of our cases, are actually not complaint-driven, but we're just checking to ensure compliance.
And there's to be another special presentation this Friday afternoon, August 30th, on the UNM main campus from noon to 2. Tell us about that, please.
Patricia Chavez will be there, and she will have a lot of information to distribute to students and to pretty much the general population. We just want to get the word out that if employees, all employees, and any employee that's experiencing issues with either not receiving their last paycheck for whatever reason, or just not getting paid in compliance with the Fair Labor Standards Act, we want to make them aware that we are here to help.
Anything you'd like to add?
I want to just reiterate, I guess, that we are here to help, and if somebody does file a complaint, it is confidential. That sometimes helps as far as the employees having that comfort that we're not going to say that there was a complaint filed in our office, because we treat every investigation in the same manner. And so just to ensure that they understand that it is confidential, and we do go back 2 years. And our laws are federal laws that are the same in every single state. So we can take complaints if somebody worked in different states as well.
Christina Marwan from the Department of Labor, many thanks for joining us.
The City Council meeting, normally scheduled for the last Wednesday of the month, will be held on the last Tuesday this month, August 27th. KSFR will air the meeting beginning at 5 p.m., preempting our usual programming on Tuesday evenings. Alternative radio can be heard on Sunday at 5 p.m., and Nuestra America will air on this Wednesday, August 28th at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday night at the Opera will resume September 3rd. The agenda for this City Council meeting is available on their website, santafenm.gov.
12:24 as At Noon continues. A new study shows that investing dollars in education pays dividends to the state. Here with more on the story is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard.
A recent study shows once again that an investment in education pays dividends to the state. Dr. Veronica Garcia is the executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children and feels New Mexico is falling short on this issue.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think we're doing as well as we could be. I know that we just recently passed a bill that created tax cuts to incentivize business to come to New Mexico, but it's sort of the cart before the horse, because in order to get people to come to New Mexico, you have to have an educated workforce. And the cuts to K-12 and higher education, higher ed has really been hit hard, and even though there have been increases to education, it has not kept up with inflation. So in essence, it's a cut. Not making those kinds of investments in early learning and care that we know we've talked about before as being critically important in ensuring that children are reading by third grade, and if kids are reading by third grade, they're more likely to graduate from high school. You know, all of these things are important in having an educated workforce. An educated workforce builds the economy. So it's a no-brainer, but yet our behavior and the choices that we make as a state are not reflective of that information. Like I say, I think we've got the cart before the horse in focusing on attracting business. And if you don't have, as I said, an educated workforce, why would we attract high-paying jobs? And that's the other thing. It's not just about jobs. It's about high-paying jobs where people can make living wages. And many of the jobs that people employ in our state, you know, we call them the working poor, can't really sustain themselves even when they're working.
It would seem a simple decision to invest in education, but it isn't necessarily so.
Well, a lot of times what I, you know, heard when I was cabinet secretary and continue to hear is, well, we can't throw more money at the problem. That until we can see results, why should we invest? And I think that what we forget is that we're caught in this horrible cycle of poverty. And when you have people that are living in poverty, there's a whole bunch of ills that come with it. And so it's going to cost more in terms of providing the scaffolding and support that children need, out of school time, you know, access to health care. You know, kids come to school hungry, kids are homeless, you know, any number of things. These kinds of programs you have to invest in. And if we weren't such a poor state, you know, maybe we wouldn't need some of these additional programs or additional days in school, for example. Programs like K3+ that add 20 days to the school year are really important for children that, you know, are underperforming, that typically are poor kids.
Dr. Garcia has some strong advice for the citizens of our state.
So as citizens of New Mexico, I think that we need to talk to our representatives, our senators, to the governor, to, you know, cabinet staff, and really let them know that as citizens of this state, we believe that investments in education is not throwing money at a problem, that we have to make the kinds of investments that help mitigate the impacts of poverty. And so if we need programs that we know work, like pre-K and kindergarten plus, you know, home visitation, that we invest in these kinds of programs, breakfast in the schools, after school, out-of-time school, you know, there's just so many different programs that we know make a difference. But overall, invest in education. Help mitigate the impacts of poverty. Look at children holistically and give them the supports they need so that we have better outcomes.
Dr. Veronica Garcia of the New Mexico Voices for Children.
Let's not give the kinds of tax cuts as incentives to bring business when we don't have an educated workforce. Let's not put the cart before the horse. This is a real case, as one of our researchers, Jerry Bradley, said, and this is a real case of invest and they will come, build it and they will come. Build an educated workforce and you will attract business to New Mexico.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
July and August in New Mexico, those are the 2 months best positioned to deliver healthy doses of precipitation from the southwestern monsoon. July was a relatively robust month for rainfall statewide. This month, however, not quite as much. Here in the last days of August, with only slight chances for late-day showers throughout the Santa Fe region, we catch up with National Weather Service forecaster David Kraft. David, it seems much of our moisture here is headed westward into Arizona. Why is that happening, and are we indeed going to see the monsoon season begin to fade out now?
This is the time of year when we expect our monsoon activity to gradually decrease. However, it shouldn't stop too abruptly. So I think what we're seeing right now is one of those brief monsoon breaks, is what we call it. There are times when the high-pressure system kind of steering the monsoon plume around does in fact shift it west of our area. And so it's not uncommon for us to see 1 to 3 day breaks in the monsoon moisture, and that's what's happening right now. As a high-pressure system has built quite strongly over the Great Plains to the northeast of New Mexico, and it's got a ridge axis that's extended down towards our state, southwestward into central and northern New Mexico at this time. So the two factors together, both putting us in a situation where we're just going to see a brief downtick or a break in the monsoon. However, that's going to change.
Well, it would be great to see some more rains fall across the state. What's in store?
We're seeing moisture with that easterly wave begin to move into the area. So once the wave moves south of us and a little bit west of us, the moisture comes up behind it and into New Mexico around the northeast quadrant. And so that will actually give southern New Mexico some improved precipitation chances starting today, and then especially as we go into Wednesday, that will begin shifting into more like southwest and west central New Mexico. And so it does look like today will be our last big break, and then we'll see improving moisture and thunderstorm chances during the latter half of the week, especially like along and west of the Rio Grande. Now, for the weekend upcoming, we're going to have the monsoon moisture plume shift back over us, and there'll be some waves moving up in the flow, and so that's going to add some instability, and there'll be much improved precipitation chances, especially from the east slopes of the Central Mountain chain westward. Right into this weekend, and the current mid-range models are indicating that that will last into the first part of the coming work week.
And does it all come to an end sometime in September?
Right. Our monsoon moisture is trending downwards by September. However, we also have the state fair, and it tends to be a time of year when we can actually see there. Definitely significant rain typically comes in September, even if it is less than we might see during the height of the monsoon. And what happens is we've got all this moisture in place because we've had the subtropical ridge over us, and so all that moisture snuck up under it for the summer. And the westerlies become more active during September, and the jet stream begins to shift further south. And so that causes storm systems coming out of the northwest to have some moisture to work with as they begin to impinge upon New Mexico. And so we do see storms develop during September, and they can produce significant precipitation.
David Kraft, forecaster with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Do you know of anyone who's hiring? With the skimpy paycheck I've been getting, I've been having a hard time paying my rent.
But you're working all the time.
But they don't pay us overtime, and we're not even getting the minimum wage.
That's illegal. You should report them.
What if I get fired?
If you make a wage claim, you're protected from retaliation. This happened to me about a year ago, and the judge made my boss pay me three times what he owed me. Why don't you call Somos Un Pueblo Unido? They can tell you what your rights are, then you decide. You work hard for your money. Don't let your employer steal your wages. For more information, call Somos Un Pueblo Unido at 505-424-7832.
12:33 here in the KSFR newsroom, and when better than the bottom of the hour to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I don't understand why parents have problems keeping their children disciplined. It's been rumored that even some celebrity parents have had trouble disciplining their children in public, like in a Santa Fe restaurant. Of course, there are the opposite parents. The very public smackers, spankers, shakers, and screamers who ought to be publicly called out as they're abusing their children. When I was a wee lad, and I never did that except when I was supposed to, my parents did not have any problems disciplining me, and there's a simple reason for that. I was a perfect child. So I was always under control, though I still appreciate a fairly recent development in child control, the leash. Keeping a young dash-out-into-the-street child from dashing out into the street or becoming lost or stolen. Myself, I've been on a leash my whole life. It's just that most people think it's not nearly short enough. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.